Bayer spent $63 billion buying Monsanto, and another $12 billion settling Monsanto's legal claims. All that money leads us to ask, should we bet the farm on Bayer stock?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now, get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1237th edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down in there in Wanaka, who are tuned into the Food Chain podcast at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, back in 2015, the World Health Organization declared that glyphosate, the active ingredient in Monsanto's Roundup weed killer, was a probable cause of cancer. In 2018, the German pharmaceutical and life sciences giant Bayer AG bought Monsanto for $63 billion. In 2020, Bayer agreed, without admitting guilt, to pay out nearly $10 billion to settle roughly 125,000 claims that its Roundup weed killer caused non-Hodgkin lymphoma. And also in 2020, Bayer agreed to set aside another $1.25 billion to cover a separate class action agreement for future claims against Roundup. That Bayer has spent so much buying Monsanto, whose patent on glyphosate has timed out, and whose liability for glyphosate is just coming due, leads us to ask, should we bet the farm on Bayer stock? Now we're here to help us find an answer to that investment decision. We have Misha Popov, who is the author of Is It Organic? And most recently, an article entitled COVID-10 and Roundup, an immunocompromised marriage from hell. Wow, that's quite a title. Welcome back to the Food Chain, Misha.
Good to be here, Michael. Yes.
So quite an article in Culture Wars there, quite an assertion that you made. So we'll look forward to picking that up as we go along here. But first of all, this notion of why Bayer AG, an extremely intelligent company, and has been for a long, long time, why it would buy a company that looks like a sinking ship. You know, if you look at Monsanto, you see that its glyphosate patent is timed out. Weeds were developing a resistance to Roundup anyway. And now it's got over 135,000 lawsuits that it's picked up. And then the WHO's claiming that Roundup is a probable cause of cancer. So it just doesn't look like a very healthy company. And yet, methinks Bayer sees something that other people are not thinking they see. Are you thinking the same thing?
Yes, exactly, Michael. And to answer your question, Bayer is a great investment right now, the same way Google is, you know, the company that claims to do no evil, the same way any of our national defense contractors like Grumman or Northrop, what have you, the makers of missiles. These are all great investments from an investment standpoint. From a moral ethical standpoint, that's another question. But yeah, I mean, I think Bayer knows something, and they're going to laugh all the way to the bank. They're getting off real easy with this $10 billion settlement, and they're getting something in return. They're not just putting all those 120 whatever thousand cases to rest. They're getting something far more valuable, and I think that's going to be indemnity. And that's what the cigarette companies got in the late 1990s, Michael. And you'll notice, just briefly, no one argues anymore about whether cigarettes cause cancer. It's a non-issue. And that's what they're hoping is going to happen with this sound claim that Roundup looks like it causes cancer.
They're
just going to say, so what?
Last time we picked up the story, almost a year ago, both you and I speculated that the reason Bayer would be buying Monsanto is that the government would be taking over the liability or something of glyphosate and managing it and distributing it and controlling it. And we speculated that Monsanto being big enough would be big enough to be able to kind of control that government regulation process. And it, and in a way, it appears to be, with what you say about indemnification, that that could very well be the case.
Yeah. Yeah, that's worth. I said at the time, I predicted, Michael, that Bayer would be willing to pay to settle these lawsuits. They'd be willing to pay the same as what they paid for Monsanto, $63 odd billion. That was easy money. And it looks like, as I say, they're getting off the hook at $10 billion with another 1 point whatever million for possible future claims, because all the claims haven't come in yet. But what if it turns out that Roundup not only causes this certain type of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, but a different type of cancer, lung cancer or something, or bone marrow cancer? Well, they will, as I say, be indemnified. And yeah, the government will definitely be involved in two ways. First of all, the government will protect Monsanto the same way the government protects tobacco companies, because they're now in business together. That's why you pay $11 for a pack of cigarettes instead of $1.50. So they'll be in business together. But the other thing is, the government will write new regulations. They'll raise the regulatory bar so high that only Bayer will be able to go on making and selling this dangerous herbicide called Roundup. There's about 40 off-brand makers of glyphosate. They'll either be driven out of business because they won't have the indemnity, or if they're lucky, they'll get bought out by Monsanto. Just, you know, same sort of consolidation we saw in the tobacco industry. We went from basically six tobacco companies. I think we're down to three now. And there's been no better time, as they say, to invest in tobacco after that settlement.
So when the patent on glyphosate timed out, a bunch of other companies jumped in and started making glyphosate under their own labels. Well, and why not?
Yeah.
Bayer saw opportunity in this. And to get to that opportunity, we'll have to take a quicker, more in-depth look at glyphosate itself. And I don't think I've ever really sat down and discussed what exactly glyphosate does. So perhaps we could pick that up, because it's going to be a way of introducing a whole new use of glyphosate it's been around for a while, but it's really starting to come into its own, and that's the use of glyphosate as a desiccant. So let's kind of take a quick look at glyphosate, if we can, Misha, and go from there. First of all, how does glyphosate kill weeds?
Well, when it first came out, when they transferred glyphosate from being a pipe cleaner to a herbicide, because they noticed whenever effluent came out of the pipes, it was killing all of the plant life and the swamp that they were illegally dumping into. So yeah, when they first came out with that in the 70s, they thought it was interrupting the photosynthesis. So they said, well, it's safe for humans because we don't photosynthesize. Turns out it's interrupting biosynthesis, which is closely related to photosynthesis, and specifically it's interrupting the shikimate pathway, mm-hmm. which is key to biosynthesis.
Now,
and again, we don't use that because we're mammals, but the microorganisms in us do.
Okay, so humans do not have a shikimate pathway, because we rely on plants to provide us with the essential elements. Plants have to get the essential elements from the environment, and they do that through the biosynthesis process of the shikimate pathway. And as I understand it, glyphosate interrupts that pathway, thereby killing the plant. But they say the shikimate pathway does not have any influence on us, because we don't have one. So what could possibly be wrong with that notion?
Yeah, well, it turns out the microorganisms in us do rely on it. So there are some microorganisms in us that are basically animals. They're not plants, but there are many in us, in our gut and in our bloodstream, that are closer or are actually plants. So they rely on the shikimate pathway. And you've heard the old adage, Paracelsus is given credit for this, but many people have said it throughout the ages, the dosage makes the poison. Well, in the case of Roundup, yes, the dosage matters, but also the uptake. So when are weeds more susceptible to Roundup? It's when they're in a growth stage. If they're not in a growth stage, it's a cloudy day, don't spray them with Roundup. Well, of course, Michael, you shouldn't even use Roundup, but that's another story. But yeah, the weeds aren't just poisoned by Roundup. They have to be tricked into sort of sucking it into their cells. Well, it's the same with the microorganisms in you. Yeah, the dosage matters, and we'll get into where that dosage is coming from. It's coming from our food and our vaccines. But more important than the dosage is how active your microorganisms are. And of course, your immune system, which is made up of trillions of these microorganisms that employ the shikimate pathway, they're in a growth stage when they're stressed out, when they are being attacked, maybe when you have the flu or a cold. And so that's the worst time to get even a part per billion of glyphosate into your bloodstream. Mm-hmm. We do rely on it because of our symbiotic relationship with all these trillions of microorganisms in us.
Okay, so the question then would be, has anybody actually looked at the impact of glyphosate on the organisms that inhabit our body, that give us our immune system?
Only in our digestive system. So the industry, basically Big Ag, admits, yes, we are eating Roundup now, which we didn't used to be because Roundup was only used pre-seeding. But as you said, it's now being used to desiccate crops, to force ripen them. So there's a dose of Roundup going on just before harvest. So that's as close as possible as you can get.
But has anybody actually looked at that relationship between the microorganisms in our body and glyphosate?
Yeah, only in terms of digestion. So they have satisfied themselves, Big Ag and their friends over at the Food and Drug Administration, that, yeah, when you eat it in Cheerios, and again, they admit you are eating parts per million or parts per billion. Yeah, you're eating it, but your gut neutralizes it. They've satisfied themselves. They have not even looked into. In fact, I quote in the article where it said that the federal regulators admitted there's a lack of research into how it impacts our immunity. And it could be doing that again through digestion, but more importantly, through vaccines. And again, they admit, yeah, there's Roundup in vaccines. That's not clear how it got there, whether it was added purposely the same way they add aluminum and mercury and God knows what else, or if it ended up in there because animal byproducts that are used as sort of the stabilizers for vaccines, those animals ate desiccated crops. And so it was turned up in their body tissue.
So it's pretty, safe.
It is there.
Yeah, it's pretty safe to say that Roundup is, or glyphosate at least, is ubiquitous. It's in the soil, it's in the plants, it's in the air, it's in the water, and it's in us. And yes, the industry that makes glyphosate and uses glyphosate claims that there is no harm to us because we do not have that shikimate pathway that plants do. So when they spray glyphosate or apply it, it only applies to plants and not people. And so it's okay for us to eat or consume glyphosate because there have been no medical studies that claim otherwise. So there we are. And that is the story today of why did Bayer buy Monsanto. Right back.
And now, back to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back. This is the Food Chain, Michael Olson with Misha Popoff. Today we're talking about Monsanto being purchased by Bayer for, I don't know, $63 billion plus another $12 billion, give or take. Wow, it's about $75 billion for a company whose principal product, glyphosate, had gone out of patent. And furthermore, weeds were not dying to the extent they used to die. So why would you buy a company for like $75 billion that appears to be a sinking ship? Maybe it wasn't a sinking ship. Maybe something else is going on that we have to get a look at in order to decide whether we should bet the farm on buying Bayer stock. And so that's the subject on the table today. And we're talking about a different use of glyphosate. In the past, glyphosate was used before a crop was planted to kill all the weeds. But desiccation is a whole new another use of it, and that just might be where Bayer is looking for the future of all their money. And desiccation, as Misha said, is when you kill a crop to harvest it. That about right, Misha?
Yes, it's forced ripening, but that's really a misnomer because you're actually killing the crop. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
So why would you kill a crop that's still living?
Yeah, well, there are some crops grown outside of their optimum region because of market pressures. So you'll have things growing, if we look at Europe, crops. There's not a lot of desiccation done on the continent, Michael, but there is a lot more done in England because England is more humid, you know, the London fog. And they're growing crops up there that they shouldn't be, that they should be maybe importing up from the continent, but, you know, they want to grow it themselves. Basically, a lot of cereal crops don't grow as well in England. But, yeah, they're going ahead and growing them. And there are no signals in the environment in the fall that tell the crop, okay, it's time to stop greening. A crop will just be greening. You know, if you're in the tropics, plants just green all year. It's like paradise.
Yeah, but
right?
They do have a certain photo period up there in the higher latitudes that would tell the crop that it's time to do something, but they're not doing it in time.
Yeah, and so they just go out and force ripen it or desiccate. And there's no shortage of literature, by the way, saying that Roundup should not be used for this purpose. There are other synthetic chemicals that are apparently used. I don't know anything about it because, as you know, I grew up on an organic grain farm. But, yeah, basically it's crops grown outside of their optimum area. But even crops grown in their optimum area, like rice grown in Asia, well, they can have problems. Again, they don't have a frost signal or even, as you say, the daylight signal. If you're closer you are to the equator, there's basically very little variance in the daytime length. And they have trouble with rice in rice paddies, especially the more moist they are. The rice just keeps greening and doesn't set seed, and the seed doesn't harden up in the kernel and doesn't make for good harvest. And so what farmers have done throughout the centuries to contend with this, it's not a new problem. It's just a problem that's become exacerbated, again, because of market pressures. Farmers are growing crops that they maybe shouldn't be growing in certain areas. But what farmers used to do was they would harvest part of the field, Michael, and then wait and harvest the next part when it was ready. And if a frost hits it, just dealing with wheat that I grew up growing on our family farm, as long as it's at the hard kernel stage, but it's still green, if a frost hits it, it doesn't impact the quality of the grain. Only if the seed is still milky or doughy will the frost cause it to be downgraded, and then you have to sell it for feed instead of for flour milling. You would just harvest part of the field, Michael. No problem, because you're the farmer. You have your own harvesting equipment, and that's what you did. You'd ballpark, or what you would do is harvest the part of the field that's red and then swath the other part. And once you swath a crop like wheat, it ripens in the swath because you've now signaled it by cutting the stem off. You've signaled it that it's time to ripen up. But all this goes out the window as we see a reduction in farmers managing their own farms. As we move to a corporate structure, you see custom harvesting. A lot of farmers are still doing their own seeding, but they've contracted out spraying, which is now done before, during, and after seeding. They've contracted that out. And most importantly to our discussion, they've contracted out harvesting. And that's called custom harvesting. So you got a bunch of crews, and they work all the way from here in Texas, where I live, all the way up to where I used to live in Saskatchewan. And they're not stopping for anything. So if you want your crop harvested in Wyoming, and the guy just finished harvesting Texas and he's on his way to Wyoming, you have to have the crop ready. And you don't have the luxury of saying to the custom harvester, well, just harvest this half that's ready, And I'll go ahead and swap the other half, and you can come back in a week and harvest. And no, the guy's coming in with a crew of like 12 combines, and he's going to take the whole thing off. So, yeah, that's the nature of corporate farming now.
So there's a lot of advantages to controlling harvest in such a way. I mean, so glyphosate becomes a very valuable new tool that is increasingly being used not only in higher latitudes like Saskatchewan, but even throughout the United States for a variety of reasons. And so desiccation becomes a whole new use for this glyphosate weed killer, correct? Yeah. It's a whole new world. That's a whole new market. Whereas Roundup and Monsanto might have been worth $63 billion for the previous use, it could be worth maybe twice or three times that much by virtue of the fact that farmers are now using it as a desiccant, not just for wheat, but for a whole bunch of crops. My goodness, there's a whole list of them being used for cereal grains like barley, oats, rice, sorghum, millet, and wheat. Flax, cotton, legumes like common beans, fava beans, garbanzos and lentils, peas and soybeans, corn, mustard, oilseed such as canola, linseed, rapeseed, safflower, and so on, potatoes, sugarcane, sunflower. So this is magnificent new industry, new world for desiccation, for killing the crops.
Yes. Yeah, and under the old model, farmers were using it as a pre-seed and burn-off. And that market really plateaued probably in the 80s. You know,
when you say a pre-season burn-off, that means glyphosate was being applied before the crop emerges from the ground. So
Before you even seeded it, actually. Okay. Yeah, pre-seeding. Right. There's actually you can get into trouble if there's still Roundup in the soil and your crop starts to sprout, it can actually kill your crop. Which really puts a lie to the claim. It used to be a marketing claim that Roundup went inert when it contacted the soil. But no, they'll tell you, make sure you do your pre-seeding burn-off at least, 10 days or 2 weeks before you seed the crop. So, yeah, it turns out Roundup stays active in the soil, as you said in our intro, Michael. You're absolutely right. So, that market really plateaued in the 80s. I mean, there's no more arable farmland in the Americas than there was in the 80s, even though our population has grown. And, all the farmers who converted to that form, it's called min-till or zero-till, because you no longer have to till the field, which is what farmers used to do before they would seed. Yeah, now you just spray Roundup and then you wait 10 days and seed the crop. That has, as a market, that plateaued. And then there was the Roundup Ready market in the 90s. That is also plateaued. Basically, any farmer growing canola now has either switched to GMO Roundup Ready canola or is still growing on contract, probably some niche market of canola, non-GMO or organic. So the two markets plateaued, but as you said, the desiccation market, it's a new panacea for Bayer, and they knew that when they bought Monsanto. There was just one little hitch, Michael, and that was this nagging claim that Roundup causes cancer. As a layman, I would say, well, of course it does. It's a poison. And again, we go back to Paracelsus saying the dosage makes the poison. There are organic herbicides and pesticides that are carcinogenic, and that's known. They're just used judiciously and sparingly. Yeah, so now we're, forget the pre-seeding and then the mid-season GMO use of Roundup. Yeah, the desiccation market, is again, especially as we see fewer farmers on the land, and that's a trend that's starting to make way to the Asian market, then we're going to see more Roundup used. And there's only two examples where you wouldn't use Roundup. First being obviously a Roundup Ready crop, like Roundup Ready canola. You can spray it all you want in the fall and it's just going to stay green because it's resistant. So you have to use some other toxic chemical to force ripen your Roundup Ready canola. The only other example, very telling though, Michael, and that's on hay. So there's a lot of Roundup ending up in seed, but not in the hay. If you desiccate hay and feed it, especially to dairy cows, they could potentially abort their calves, and then you don't have a milking cow anymore. You gotta get the bull in again and have another calf put into her. Wow. So they learned that one the hard way, by the way, when desiccation started in the 90s. And I was just beginning my career as an organic inspector and heard these horror stories about farmers who became very enamored with this new use of Roundup, which, by the way, was not even approved in the 90s, but they went ahead and did it anyway. The one stumbling block was when you sprayed, say, alfalfa, because then, it gets nice, and that's what you want when you do your haying. You want a nice, dry crop. Well, yeah, it caused all sorts of problems. So they still desiccate feed crops, like you were mentioning earlier, barley and oats. Then that feed is being fed to the cattle, but it doesn't have the same impact on the cow as hay, because the cow eats a lot more hay than feed. In any case, yeah, one way or another, it's getting into our livestock, and then we eat the livestock. They assure us that our digestive systems neutralize it. But then it's getting into our vaccines, probably from animal byproducts.
Before we go into vaccines, I'd like to back up a little bit and talk about dosages. Because in the traditional use of glyphosate herbicides like Roundup, you would spray before you planted your crop. Okay, and you kill the weeds so you could plant a crop in the ground that had no weeds. And then your crop would grow up and there it would be. So one would imagine that the dosage that we down the food chain received from that kind of Roundup usage would have been kind of minimal. The Roundup would have been in the soil, it would have been in the water, would have been in the plants, but not much. Because it had been there for a long time, probably biodegraded or something. But with this desiccation, we're literally drowning the crop, a living crop, in Roundup. So it's not just in the roots or in the soil. It's drenched the whole plant. So, it would seem like those of us down the food chain that eat, breakfast cereals that are made from these grains or anything else, a hamburger bun from the fast food drive-in, that we would be getting a whole lot more glyphosate than we ever had before.
Yeah, and we are, and no one denies it, Michael. No one on either side of the fence, neither of the lawyers involved on either side in this lawsuit deny it. There was a case brought against General Mills, the makers of Cheerios, for Roundup in Cheerios. And again, no one denied this. General Mills' defense was, there's no literature proving that that harms people who eat Cheerios. And so they won. They beat the lawsuit. Well, the reason there's no research into this is because no one's done it yet. Again, as I said, there's been research done into our guts neutralizing Roundup, but does it fully neutralize it? Because all you need is, one part per million getting into your bloodstream. And the regulators admit there's a lack of research in that area.
And has anybody looked at the correlation between the increased use of glyphosate and the increased use of, and the increased incidence of gluten intolerance? I mean, they seem to be pretty much rising in parallel.
Yes, exactly. Now, when you monkey with your immune system, let's say peanut allergies, so you get some vaccination, or your child does, and there's nothing to do with peanuts in the vaccine, but they get the vaccine, Michael, and then go home and have a peanut butter sandwich. That was probably the worst time of life to have a peanut butter sandwich, because while their system was in this heightened state of reaction, reactivity, because they put adjuvants in the vaccines, like aluminum and mercury, and that awakens, that jars your immune system. Well, then you eat a peanut butter sandwich, or you get stung by a bee, and your body now decides to make that the target, and then your body immunizes itself against the peanuts or against the bees, and now that's potentially a death sentence. So yeah, to gluten, yeah, we're talking about lockstep here. I mentioned it was in the it was really in the early 90s that Roundup was first being illegally used, and no one cared. No one was charged with anything. By the late 1990s, it was approved, and then farmers just started using it more and more. And yes, especially on wheat. Wheat can be notorious for staying green and not ripening up right when you want it to, especially if you have a wet fall. So yeah, wheat became one of the go-to applications of Roundup as a desiccant. And yeah, so again...
And that's our daily bread, right? That's our daily bread. And cereal. And pizza.
Yes. And pasta. And yeah, if you had told our grandparents that there would come a day when a kid couldn't eat bread or drink milk because of lactose intolerance, or if they got stung by a bee in the backyard, they could drop dead if you didn't give them an EpiPen within the first 5 minutes, or the peanut
and
allergy.
And on.
Yeah, they would laugh at you and say, what are you talking about? And yes, we have created these problems, and Roundup could certainly be at the root of that. But
okay, hold that thought, Misha. We're going to come take a quick break. Right back. This is The Food Chain. Michael Olson with Misha Popoff and you.
So much to say, so little time to say it on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
So there are these parallels that you can see. If you look just a little bit, you can see that we started using glyphosate to desiccate our wheat crops maybe 20, 30 years ago, 25 years ago. And what do you see since then? You see this incredible increase in gluten intolerance, as well as other strange things, autism and so on and so on. Now, is there a correlation between gluten and our body's immune system? Well, don't know, because nobody's really looked into that. And why haven't we looked into that?
Well, that brings us to, why did Bayer pay full market value for Monsanto? Why didn't they try to get a deal? Because, as you've already intimated, they're looking at not only recouping control over Roundup, they can't reinstate the patent, but they're going to have de facto monopoly control, just like tobacco companies have control over tobacco, and the government will help them with that, and they'll help the government give them that. They're not only going to get that, but they're going to see huge growth in the use of it as a desiccant. But as I said, there was this little nagging issue of Roundup maybe causing cancer. Well, so I think either this lawsuit came at just the right time for Bayer, and they thought to themselves, now's the time to buy Monsanto. It was the perfect lawsuit, in other words, because it deals only with people who apply Roundup, Michael. If the lawsuit was about consuming Roundup in our cereals and pastas and Cheerios, or if it was about Roundup showing up in our vaccines, oh goodness, then having a de facto monopoly control over Roundup would be worthless. And they knew that. So they want this lawsuit. Like I say, it either came at just the right time, or they might have known, you know, let's go buy Monsanto and let's get some trial lawyers to give us the kind of lawsuit we would like to settle in 2 or 3 years hence, which brings us to today. I think they're all too happy to write a check for $10 billion and another $1 billion for possible future claims coming out of the woodwork. And then it's all put to bed. And as I say in the article, as long as no one, like we're doing, Michael, as no one says, okay, that's people who applied Roundup, but what about eating it or having it injected into your kid's arm for the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine? What about that? As long as they can keep that off the table and settle this lawsuit, then they're in business.
So all of the costs of this stuff are going to be factored into the cost of Roundup and the cost of doing business. So one would suspect that farming using these techniques that use a lot of glyphosate will become more expensive. What if farmers just say, nah, we're not going to do this anymore?
Well, then we'd need more farmers on the land to handle harvest. See, seeding is very flexible. The worst thing that happens if your seeding is delayed because of a late spring or a lot of rain during seeding, the worst thing that happens is you crops. So instead of growing Wheat, which takes 120 days, you can switch to peas or barley, which are 90 days. That's the worst thing that happens. You're still going to be in business. It wasn't ideal because you'll get more money per bushel of wheat than peas or barley, but that was the worst thing that can happen. Well, if your harvest gets messed up, you could lose your whole farm. So desiccation is now a godsend for farmers with, you know, 5,000 acres or 10,000 acres. Those farmers are basically farming by the calendar, Michael. Instead of waiting for the seasonal conditions to be just right, instead of walking their fields and saying, okay, this highland is nice and dry and crisp, but the lowland is still green, forget it. Just look at the calendar, say, well, that same custom harvest crew used last year, they're coming up here in 3 weeks. That gives me 2 weeks to spray the crop. And then by law, you know, they do have to wait. It's about a week. They have to wait before the harvest. So if they have 3 weeks, they got 2 weeks to spray it and then have the crew come in. And yeah, it's called farming by the calendar. So there's no doubt bear sees growth potential in that.
Yeah. So in effect, glyphosate gives farmers control over the seasons, which is something farmers have always fought with since the beginning of time. But with this tool, farmers can say, I can deal with the seasons now. And if you have 5,000 acres of something growing out in the field, you're not going to be running around switching crops or anything like that. So you're going to need that glyphosate to control things. Now, do you see agriculture giving up glyphosate?
No. It's now impossible because we've already chased the last generation of farmers into the city to get, you know, 9-to-5 jobs. And it's going to be really, well, I'd say it's really hard to get them back, to get farmers back on the land. There's a real parallel here, just like you were saying earlier with gluten intolerance and the use of overuse and misuse of Roundup as a desiccant on wheat. Well, there's also a parallel relationship here to the ever-decreasing headcount of farmers on the farm and the ever-increasing use of Roundup. They just go hand in hand. So, yeah, the solution would be to go back. And you don't have to go back to the, you know, the 1950s or something like that. You just have to go back to the 80s or the 90s. There was literally twice as many farmers on the land, Michael. And that is the only way to not eliminate Roundup, but to drastically reduce it and get it away from its use as a forced ripening agent.
We're using lots and lots and lots more glyphosate, not only to kill weeds, but to kill the crops we eat, the very crops that we eat. The crops that make our daily bread, we're killing them with glyphosate. Yep. We're drenching them in glyphosate. How can consumers avoid eating glyphosate?
Well, organic is a good way, but you and I have had discussions. We're importing way too much organic product from China, Brazil, and Mexico. So there's some problems there. But yeah, generally the studies done by the federal agencies, they do show organic food. First of all, there's no Roundup, and there's very little of all the other potentially synthetic toxins in your food. So yeah, Roundup is one way. I prefer to see the lid blown off this and just farmers stop relying so heavily on it. And also, you mentioned that a lot of weeds becoming resistant to Roundup. So that is impinging, let's call it the traditional market of preceding weed kill and even the mid-season use on a GMO Roundup ready crop. Mm-hmm. Roundup resistant weeds are growing more and more. So the alternative is to use another herbicide, but let's just jump ahead to the use of Roundup as a desiccant. Well, that problem is a non-issue. I mean, unless your crop becomes resistant to Roundup, and even if it did, you can still harvest it. It's just going to be every thousandth stem of wheat might be resistant and it'll stay green. Well, who cares? Just go ahead and harvest it. So yeah, that was a real issue for Monsanto. They knew their product was becoming useless. Basically, it was only a matter of time. Maybe it would take 10 years, maybe it would take 100 years, but sooner or later, every weed known to farmers would become resistant. It's simple biology. But again, when you desiccate a crop, you're killing it, and it doesn't matter. So there was no way for a resistant stem in your crop to reproduce and have babies, in other words, that are also that inherit that resistance. So yeah, desiccation is puts that problem to rest for them.
So in other words, those of us down the food chain that eat food that is not organic, especially the grains, are more than likely to be eating Roundup.
Definitely, and I don't know. I mentioned the exception before was your Roundup Ready crops. Well, they're getting it in the middle of the season or early in the season instead of at the end. And hay. The only other example is orchards, because you mentioned a lot of ground crops are getting it too, like potatoes, a lot of row crops. Yeah, there's no end to it. So yeah, orchard crops, what some people call permaculture. Yeah, no one's desiccating apple trees that I've heard of yet, and I don't think it would work if you did. So thank God for that. But yeah, when you look at your diet, there's no way around it. There's no way around it. Slip of the tongue there. There's no way around it. You're getting Roundup in every bite. You are.
And they say it's good to eat.
Yeah. Now that one, Monsanto moved away from the. They used to say you could drink a cup of it, and yeah, they kind of smartened up and quietly quit claiming that in their marketing. But it's a poison, right? So even the most benign poison in use in farming, like I say, even the organic ones, then we go to Paracelsus, and it's the dosage making the poison, or in the case of Roundup, it's the susceptibility of the target. And just to come back to that one more time, when your immune system is stressed, when it's under attack, even psychologically, Michael, so if you think, oh no, I'm going to die of COVID, your immune system goes into defense mode. And now you eat a bowl of Cheerios with one part per million of Roundup in it, which otherwise would have just passed right through you. Well, guess what? Your immune system is on alert and ends up absorbing it quicker. So, yes, with Roundup, it's not just the dosage. It's the absorption rate of the target. And I think that really makes Roundup unique, which is probably why it's being so widely used throughout the growing season.
So Bayer looks at this situation and thinks, agriculture is not going to go without Roundup. It just isn't going to happen. So I'm going to spend $75 billion buying Monsanto. I'm going to make that bet. What was it that Monsanto didn't see? Why didn't Monsanto buy Bayer?
Oh yeah, easy answer. Bad PR, which they earned every bit of it. Bayer, meanwhile, even though they had connections with the National Socialists back in the 30s in Germany, they really sort of cleaned up their reputation since then. And they're the makers of Bayer aspirin, and that'll stop you from having a heart attack. So they had a much better public relations profile. Monsanto knew their name was in the toilet. It was about 10 years ago that Hugh Grant, not to be confused with the Hollywood movie star Hugh Grant, but Hugh Grant, the CEO of Monsanto, he actually considered changing the name, Michael. Can you imagine that? That he really thought, well, that's how desperate Monsanto was 10 years ago. So, yeah, when there was going to be a merger, probably no matter what. But to answer your question, it ended up being Bayer swallowing Monsanto instead of vice versa because of their reputations. And well, Monsanto knew they could never pull this off.
Well, there's nothing more difficult in marketing than to reestablish a good position for something that has earned a bad position. And if any company in America had established a bad position, it would have been Monsanto for the way it bullied around just about everybody, consumers, farmers, and everybody alike, pushed them around pretty good. So Bayer said, let's make this, and it was an all-cash deal, wasn't it?
Yes. And you said earlier, Bayer, they're not stupid. Neither are their accountants and lawyers working at Bayer. More importantly, neither are their creditors. So it was a cash deal, but they had to borrow some of that cash. Yeah, there's no share agreement. Often when one company buys out another, they say, well, we don't have, in this case, don't have the $63 billion on hand, and a bank won't loan it to us, so we'll give you shares in the new company, in this case, the new company called Bayer. No, they didn't do that. They gave Hugh Grant and all his boys and girls over it, they gave him money. You're done. Get out of here. And yes, they had to borrow a lot of that money. So not only did Bayer know exactly what they were getting into? They could read the headlines of the last 25 years. Their creditors knew, and the ratings agencies who insure and rate their creditors knew. And all of those people approved this deal long before the ink went to the paper. So you had all these lawyers and accountants and global financial analysts, all of them giving green light, green light, green light. And at the top of it all is, of course, Werner Baumann, the German CEO of Bayer. Definitely a smart guy, maybe not ethically grounded as we would hope he would be, but definitely a smart guy. And yeah, he had the final say, and he had no problem paying for Monsanto and no problem settling all of these lawsuits. And again, I think he got off easy.
Yeah, he just handed out the money. Here, sign the waiver. Yep. I'll give you the money, and that'll be that. And we'll go happily on our way. And looking into the future, it sounds like going happily on their way will include some kind of an indemnification by the federal government for the use of glyphosate, because our farmers can no longer live without it. It's a must-have. Am I wrong?
Yep, exactly. You do not want to be the head of the USDA, but, you know, in a future administration, you don't want to be the head of the USDA breathing a discouraging word about the use and overuse and misuse of Roundup as a late-season forced ripening agent. You do not want to be that guy, because you'll have every farm bureau in the country, every lobby group, and probably a lot of farmers breathing down your neck. Yeah, it'll be like saying, we're going to stop using rubber for tractor tires. Okay. You know, it's just inconceivable.
Okay, so the big question, Misha Popoff, should you and I bet our farms on buying stock of Bayer AG?
If all you want to do is make money, oh yeah, for sure. Go all in. But if you have ethical concerns and you maybe, with whatever belief system you operate under, you know, Christian, Hindu, Buddhism, if you think there's a life after death or even karma, then definitely not. This has disaster written all over it, and we're going to see it in our children and grandchildren, Mike.
Okay, Misha Popoff, thank you so much for joining us on The Food Chain. And folks, remember Michael Olson's third law of the food chain: cheap food isn't. Thank you, Misha.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me, Michael.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.